Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Weekden Update, your weekly dose of everything Grizzlies presented by the Grizzden Podcast and the Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Will Walker, and I'm joined every week by John Kraft. How's it going, John?
It's going. So I'm tired of moral victories, but I think that's probably what tonight was.
It is 10:30 p.m. Central Time. John and I both made the journey to FedEx Forum earlier tonight. We made the journey back home. We are now jumping on for our weekly podcast. The Grizzlies are 3-10. That's good for 14th in the West, 27th in the NBA. They are 27th on offense with a 109 rating, 17th on defense, 113.7 rating. That is good for 23rd in net rating, which is at a negative 4.7. I will note the difference in our record, 27th in terms of record and 23rd in terms of net rating. I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later on. But first, John, who's up?
Who's up? And I think it's a pretty obvious candidate, but it'd be Santi Aldama is who's up for me. Basically, honestly, I mean, it was garbage time Santi against the Lakers, but I mean, he was probably the only person who really came to play at all in LA. I mean, Roddy maybe a little bit, but and then obviously he's been incredible the last two games. He's been everything you would want him to be. We'll get into it later. I mean, he still like giveth and taketh away a little bit, Santi, but he's been great. I think tonight's stat line was a 27, 11 and 6. That is pretty incredible. So Santi, for sure is my who's up.
28, 12 and 6. Short of a point and a rebound.
This is what happens when you look right after a game. And then the NBA comes around and they credit him with even more.
That's right. My who's up is two-way contracts. So the Grizzlies have been, for all the faults in the middle of the roster, which we've covered, especially on the last podcast. If you missed it, go back and listen to that one. But the two-way contracts this year, specifically Jacob Gilliard and Vince Williams Jr., and our third two-way is GG Jackson right now, who's absolutely crushing it in the G League. If you don't follow that very closely, he was actually active for tonight's game. I thought we might see a few minutes of GG Jackson, but we also saw Kenny Lofton Jr. play minutes tonight against the Celtics, who was on a two-way last year and was converted to a standard contract at the end of the regular season. And if you go back to the two-way, hasn't been around for very long, but we have certainly utilized that in a big way. I was looking up right before the podcast started to see if John Conchar was ever on a two-way, but Kraft, you reminded me that he was signed in an era where we had plenty of roster spots to spare, and he would have been on a two-way had we been let's say, in the last couple of years. But I would sort of put him in that group as well, undrafted. Just we at the very bottom of the roster, you're looking at guys that are contributing against teams like the Celtics, who are right now the best team in the NBA. And I just have to applaud our scouting team for bringing in guys on two-way contracts that can actually contribute and aren't just swings. They're true value adds to this team right now.
Yeah, I even feel like Tillman can get kind of he was almost like an honorary two-way as well. Him and Conchar spent probably the bulk of their rookie year playing down in South Haven, so for the Memphis Hustle. So we've done a very good job. Honestly, Kenny Chandler is probably our only miss in the second round. You know, it seems like in a while, like we do a very good job of getting these fringe guys for sure.
My Who's Down is our in-season tournament hopes. We were officially the first team eliminated from in-season tournament contention. And, you know, we're going to have an extra regular season game. The hope is that we have an opponent who also, or definitely will have an opponent who did not qualify for the in-season tournament as well. And let's hope that just means they're also a bottom half team, if you will. But yep, sorry, we're not going to Vegas, so we can cancel those plane tickets. Who's
my,
your who's down?
My who's down is Grizz Twitter. So we've, you know, there's a long history of Grizz Facebook, which was terrible in all ways almost. And like I said, I don't call it X, I still call it Twitter. But Grizz Twitter has just been really bad. You know, I mean, maybe people would say, well, that's Twitter in general, but I just feel like even some people who I've liked in the past are just crazy opinions. I just feel like when I get on there, so many, even of the, you know, typical Grizz Twitter follows, the famous follows, I just feel like the combo of sort of negativity coupled with bad opinions, I can handle one or the other. You know, and even the humor seems a little weird these days. So I'm going, I wanted to go away from a player for once. But that's Grizz Twitter. I've just been very disappointed in what people, it seems like everybody's complaining about the exact wrong things, like our defense and other things, which we might get into in news and notes, but Grizz Twitter down for me. So I've been very disappointing.
All right, Kraft, I've got a question for you. And it has to do with someone you've already named, and that's Santi Aldama. Should Santi be starting until John Morant comes back?
I definitely think so, especially without Smart. I mean, I think he's basically, you know, been the starting wing now, basically starting in the second half of the last game and this game. And I think he's crushed that position. He shows he should be the three. And I think, you know, him and Jaren lineups continue to do really well. And I think what's great is you can have Bismack in there or, like tonight with a more perimeter oriented game, you can have Jaren and Santi be the front court. And I actually think this could be very exciting for future games. When potentially maybe a Jaw Smart Bane lineup might be too small in certain instances, or just like being able to have this other lineup that's really good. And so, yes, I think he should be. In fact, I'm go far as to say I'm probably going to be mad if he's not starting until Jaw gets back.
I completely agree. And the critique you could have is that to start Bismack Biyombo, Jaren Jackson, and Santi Aldama, you know, you're definitely sacrificing some finesse for size. But I would push back on that. And if you've been watching Santi the last three games, you can see he's a Swiss Army knife. And he just so happens to be 7 feet tall as well. And on a team where we have we have way too many undersized centers, and we also have a lot of small guards, some size can just, pure size can help us a ton. And when you pair that with, his shooting splits have been fantastic as well. So he has these almost guard-like skills. Why not? Why not put him at the three? Like, he definitely can't be worse than the other options we have at the three on the roster right now. And sure, when Ja comes back, when Marcus Smart comes back, which we're going to mention Marcus Smart in just a second, yes, the logical you know, put your best five on the floor would say have Ja at the one, Marcus at the three. But I'm not sure that Santi couldn't play himself into a starting role, even with Ja back and a healthy Smart. So I don't know. He's done a lot to impress me over the course of the last week. I thought one critique I've had of him, and I haven't mentioned it on the pod yet, was that when he came off the bench just this season thus far, when he came back from injury, he seemed to play just lethargic and didn't look like he was doing much more than when he just had the ball. But there's something about the mentality of guys when they start versus come off the bench. Some, it doesn't matter. They're just going to play hard regardless. But there is something, I think, going on psychologically where you know you're going to have your minutes that you're going to play if you're a starter, and you know you're getting prioritized regardless of the matchup. And so I get it. That's why the matchup was sort of why we did it tonight, and just being shorthanded. But I think there's a real argument for seeing Santi as a long-term starter. So that's kind of the headline to me of the last week. But we also have to get to the low light, which is Marcus Smart. After some weirdly positive reports, and when I say reports, I mean mainly Jenkins' interview, like, a few hours before the injury report came out, I think he was interviewed at practice and was like basically saying that he didn't think that Smart's injury was going to be long-term or too much. Things were looking up for that. And yet we saw the announcement 3 to 5 weeks for an ankle sprain. And you pair that with also just this weird Luke Kennard soreness injury. And you know that the injury report is just ridiculously long when the Grizzlies PR Twitter account can't fit it all in the character limit and they have to take a screenshot of a Word document to show you how many guys are out. But what'd you think when you saw that Smart news come through?
I mean, it hit hard. I was also sad for him because I know the game tonight against the Celtics was a game that he had circled and is going to miss that, you know, obviously miss that. And, you know, and I also think that what stinks is I think some of the complications of this season so far has been him trying to figure out a new system, fit in, figure out his spots, you know, and so honestly that puts him back on that a little bit more. But hopefully, obviously still plenty of season left to get acclimated, but that was frustrating too. And just, I don't know. It's the kind of when it rains, is it pours type mentality. I mean, you know, fortunately two of our three core players have been healthy. You know, with Bane and Jaren, but man, everybody else has been injured, and it's just starting to get very tiring. To just, you know, like, I mean, tonight it was just crazy going to the game and seeing warm ups, and it's like, do we have enough people? Because I thought we would have like 10 or 11, and then I even saw that Derrick Rose was, and I was texting you, is Derrick Rose a late scratch? And so, you know, you look over the Celtics and there's just so many people warming up, and compared to us. And so I'm just ready, you know, obviously using all three of our two-way players on the active roster and all these sorts of things. So it's just more, you know, and honestly, I'm also nervous about the Kennard. I just don't, this knee soreness that's keeping him out, that's keeping Tillman out. It's a little worrying. You know, obviously with Adams and his knee, I'm just nervous about knees. And so hopefully, but it's, you know, all signs point to both Luke and Tillman being back maybe Wednesday, hopefully Friday. So.
Yeah, it's just the weirdest injury list right now with the left eye abrasion for Jake Laravia, which I get it. Like it's not as if he was a key part of the rotation at all in the last 2 weeks, but on a night like tonight when truly this should have been a scheduled loss. And I'd like to get to the game itself in just a second, but yeah, the injury report right now and Derrick Rose too, he actually played pretty well against the Spurs, I thought, and to not have him because of the second night of a back-to-back, it's just like you said, when it rains, it truly pours. And I am excited to announce, though, Kraft, I don't know if you've been doing the math here, but we are now 13 games in to the regular season, which means we are over the halfway point to when Ja Morant is scheduled to make his return, which is on December 19th. That's exactly 1 month from now. So he had a little Instagram story or a tweet, one or the other day, apparently, and it was a song called 31 Days. And so, you know, he's watching the clock as well, and I know the Grizzlies are too.
Yeah, and he's been a pretty active a little, you know, obviously we get nervous when we hear John Morant's active on any kind of social media, but he has been, you know, retweeting a lot of things from the Lakers game, from the Spurs game. I haven't looked tonight yet to see, but, you know, you can tell, I'm sure he is very ready to be back. And so can't wait. So hopefully 12 more games. Let's get here.
So tonight, just down the stretch, Santi had been so, so good. He had been great. And we had such a costly turnover that was just so Santi. Just trying to pass it behind his head to the corner. And then the next possession down the floor, you had Desmond Bane. This is the problem. You were talking about, you hear people complaining about the defense, and when teams are shooting like they are, obviously that's where our heads go because that's where the damage seems to be done. But when you're looking at the offensive end, I think that possession with Bane is a perfect encapsulation of late game half court offense still being an issue for the Grizzlies, and personnel is a huge part of that, but also we just have to get better in that area. But you see Bane dribble out the shot clock, and just with a few seconds left, he has Kristaps Porzingis switched onto him, and he was thinking about pulling from, you know, way downtown, and honestly, mm-hmm. that would have been better than what ended up happening, which was him just fumbling the ball and then having to force up a three, where
like a fade away. With his foot on the two-point line, I mean, on the three-point line as well. So it would have been a two, even if he made that kind of miracle fadeaway.
Yeah, and then further, you had Boston coming down and missing a shot. Then it looked like they were getting an offensive rebound, but we stole that away, pushed it up to John Conchar, who then swung it to Santi for just a wide-open three. I mean, there were a couple guys around him. It was in the fast break. It wasn't like it was just in the flow of a half-court offense, but he'd been making those tonight, and he just missed it. And there was also, Kraft, did you hear anything about the end of the game with the timeout situation? Because you and I both were there, and it's one time when I would have liked to have heard the broadcast at the time, but what was – can you clear any of that
so
up?
I've heard the broadcast, and I'll say it was so loud in there. Pete and Brevin were basically like, they were doing the play-by-play. So it was Aldama's shot goes up, and then Zaire gets the rebound, and they're just, you know, and they're doing the play-by-play, and it's like, oh, Kristaps blocks Zaire's shot, game's over. And then immediately, though, kind of in between that, Brevin's going, timeout, Jenkins had called timeout, you know, but, you know, and so it's really hard with, I think Zaire probably got the rebound with about around 2 seconds, maybe 1.8, something like that. And, you know, of course, we would have loved Zaire to have called a timeout since he was facing the sideline. But you do not expect Zaire to make that kind of an IQ play. And Jenkins was all the way out to half court screaming timeout when Zaire possessed the ball. But, you know, the refs didn't hear it. And that's what happens. But that's, you know, and so that it is unfortunate. I think it's also going back, it's unfortunate because I think basically Jenkins had two timeouts in his pocket. And so you look back at that terrible Bane possession where he was shot a fadeaway long two-pointer, and you think, you know, with about 7 seconds left, nothing happening, that would have been probably a good time for Jenkins to have used his timeout there as well. So, I mean, that was a tough situation. But I'll tell you, I would take that Santi shot, you know, every day, and he just missed. I mean, it was a good look for three to win the game, and it just missed it. Back rimmed it.
Yeah, I guess your point about it being a moral victory, yes, we're tired of those. I will say, though, there to me have only been a few this season. Other games, it's kind of like the teams are either just playing better or just hitting crazy shots that they don't normally hit. And this did feel like the most true moral victory we've had against a team where they were pretty much fully healthy and are playing their rotation. I mean, if you're bringing Al Horford, Sam Hauser, and Peyton Pritchard, or your three off the bench, and let's just call it a playoff rotation, and four of your starters have been all-stars before, and it's just a filthy team. And you saw they came out defensively, they just force you to, they will run you all the way down to the end of the shot clock. You have to work extra hard to get a good shot. And offensively, I felt like we did get some second chance opportunities, more than I was expecting. Yeah. But that a lot of those did come with Kristaps Porzingis out of the game, and we also had our bigs in foul trouble, which hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, you played Lofton way too many minutes. There was a lineup at the end, I believe it was the second quarter or the third quarter, where Santi was like the five and Roddy was the next tallest dude. And
yeah, so I just to throw that in there, because that was a big deal, because it was 40-38 in the second quarter, and we had to, because of foul trouble and other things, had to play a lineup that was Bane, Conchar, Zaire, Santi, Lofton.
Ugh.
Was our five, and it went from 40-38 to 50-40, and this is one of those things where, like, that was the ball game, honestly. I mean, that like 2.5 minute stretch with that five out there, was the ball game. And honestly, that's one of the reasons why I think Conchar's, who I think played well, despite having to guard, you know, Jason Tate, basically, you know, probably second place MVP right now. But like that Santi, Lofton, Zaire, three forward lineup, is just really rough. And I think Gilliard was in there for a little bit too. So, I mean, it was, but that little stretch where we got down 10, fortunately for us, it would have been worse, but, Jenkins made a great challenge call. But that stretch was really key, because basically that happened and then we fouled a 3-pointer, but then Jenkins challenged it. And then we actually not only won the challenge, but then put back in basically, our starting five. And starting five with, instead of Bismack, we had Vince Williams, if you want to talk about Vince Williams. But that five brought us back to where it was, you know, a 3-point game at halftime. But that little stretch, I feel like 3 to 4 minutes in the second quarter really, really, really killed us, because that was that besides that, we were with them. We were honestly ahead of them the rest of the game. But that little stretch really hurt.
Yep, another second quarter. That's been the issue whole season.
Yeah, we tied the third and won the first and fourth. We lost, yep. But losing the second by 4 points got us.
Yeah, Vince played great. I think when he hits open shots, it's just a bonus, because he's just one of those guys that, I think he went lower in the draft because he's missing just a couple of inches, but he plays within himself. That's what I always am confident of when Vince Williams is on the floor. He's going to go to the right spot. He's going to do the right things. He had a big block. I believe it was on Derek White coming down in transition, just absolutely swallowed it. And then he had, like I said, a couple of those big threes, which it was near the end of the shot clock. We really needed it. And he's a guy that I, on our Lost podcast early in the season when we had to do a new prediction, like new bold predictions, my original bold prediction, which we can never prove it, of course. Maybe we could. I could go find the file.
I'll vouch for you.
It was my bold prediction was that Vince Williams would be on the roster next season. And because I do think this is going to be a high turnover offseason coming up, but he just felt like a guy that they're confident in. Like, I think it's more who do you trust at this point? And Vince Williams not having barely any minutes compared to guys like Roddy and Zaire at this point, but he was being trusted it was not just, you know, spot minutes here, there. He played 16. And when you're shorthanded, you need guys like that. And it goes back to my point about the two way where I think they've just really hit on something there. Is he a long-term Grizzly? Who knows? That was just a funny, bold prediction that I had, but it speaks to a larger point, which is he fills a position that we need, and he's yet another bite at the apple on that wing position, and we'll see what happens with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting. I know some people are upset, at least around me in the crowd, but also I think on Twitter from a quick glance of the fact that Zaire was put back in, he was taken out, and I get, you know, it's one of those things. One, just as an organization, I think until Zaire is gone, our organization is going to try to put Zaire in those kind of situations. But then secondly, I can totally see, because Bane looked totally exhausted. He was the only ball handler for a lot of that game, honestly, which is one of the reasons why I also think Conchar was in at the end. But I could tell Zaire can handle the ball a little bit better right now than Vince Williams. But besides that, I mean, I think there's arguments to be made Because I know for me, I know Vince Williams is going to play great defense. And so far, he has shown that he will knock down that open three. He's not going to play make. He's not going to be able to dribble the ball well. But I think that's why, you know, Zaire was there at the end. And honestly, Zaire made a couple good plays there at the end with a put back and some other things. But right now, you know, I mean, obviously when Vince was in, we had energy. We were really shutting the Celtics down, honestly. Like, I feel like when he was in, the Celtics did not score.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Plus eight off the bench. He was the highest plus minus there, just to note it. Let's move to the Spurs game. I felt like this was a one of those where they're the other team in the league who's been just playing so poorly. They don't defend very well despite having Victor Wembanyama, who truly is a spectacle. Like, if you do get a chance to watch any Spurs games, you should, just to see him play. But there's nothing around him right now. And yet the Grizzlies went down by 19 in the first half. And it was just, I don't know. It was dark. Speaking of Grizz Twitter, like, that was halftime was very, very dark. And then
it was dark.
You know, there were reports of a lot of passion at halftime. Not only Jenkins, but players stepping up, speaking, just saying, you know, this can't happen. It can't be how we play. And they came out, responded, came all the way back. And as much grief as I like to give him, Zaire Williams did play well. Probably had one of his better games as a Grizzly with 17 points and hit some timely shots, did some other stuff as well. I do always preach patience on those who want to react to, like, high moments of Zaire, because then you come out the next game and you see something like the Celtics game, but we can still recognize it for what it was. Like, he was instrumental in that comeback. And then once you get San Antonio on their heels, I mean, they're just not a good team right now, and they're looking at the long term, and they aren't in a hurry. It's a game that a team like the Grizzlies should win, even with only like 11 players, I think, were active last night. Yeah. And knowing that it was a back to back as well, and this was the winnable game of the two, there was a sense of urgency, and it was a huge response by them in the second half.
Yeah, no, huge win. And that was, you know, one of my complaints is that everybody's upset because the Spurs, you know, about our defense. And I'm, you know, for me, it's like, well, the Spurs are actually decent, offensively. It's the fact that we only scored 51 points in the first half that's ridiculous, because this team does not defend. I mean, they're giving up 130, 140. That was my frustration. My hope, you know, of course, I've been hoping this all year, was that their good first half shooting numbers. I was like, you know, we're guarding better. I don't think those will continue. So that was my hope. You know, obviously I've hoped that earlier in the year too. But fortunately that did come down, and I think holding them to 40 holding them to 40 is really good. And I think it's really exciting seeing how we played the Celtics tonight. So the Spurs are a good offense that we held down, but then the Celtics are like an elite offense that we held to 102 points. So that's six straight quarters where I think we've played what we expect of Grizzlies defense, and that top five, top 10 type defense. And so I think that's very exciting for me to see. It feels like maybe we're finally getting it and have that urgency. And then kind of what you were saying about Zaire, I think one thing that I'm just going to be looking at the rest of the season and going to be interested to see is when we play teams that are younger or more finesse oriented, maybe high paced, if Zaire plays a lot better than when we play sort of very physical half court. Like, to me, playing a team like the Celtics, playing a team like the Miami Heat. Zaire just like can't even, it's like he doesn't even belong in the building. I mean, not to be so mean to Zaire, but it just, he just is lost in games like that compared to, I feel like, the up and down sort of finesse, a lot of youth type teams. And so the hope is when we play some more of those teams, which I don't think we've gotten to play a lot of those teams yet this year. When we play a lot more of those teams, hopefully that those would be the good Zaire games.
And frankly, though, the problem is when you look ahead, which we are a team that right now should look ahead to the playoffs, and I believe that's how our front office is thinking about all of this, you're not like that dies in the playoffs. You do maybe right. In the first couple of rounds, if you're the better team, you can dictate how the game is played in terms of the flow, in terms of the pace. But ultimately, when the game comes down to the fourth quarters, it's going to be slower, it's going to be physical, and everybody's going to be putting things on the line, and it's just kind of like, where does Zaire fit in that? So I think that's a really good, really good call out and something definitely to watch as we move forward. I don't know how much there is to say about the Lakers game, but did you have any more notes about this past week?
Yeah, I mean, one note is just so one note kind of combined the Lakers game. The one thing that was hard in the Lakers game was Jaren, who had not played great in the Clippers game before that, I think just really sort of got punked. Like AD kind of came and played hard, and it feels like right now, sort of the Lakers, in a sense, both LeBron and AD kind of have Jaren's number, at least know how to get under his skin a little bit. And so it was really, really good to see for me in the Spurs game that Jaren came out in the second half and was basically like, I'm going to take this game over. I'm going to drive the basket over and over and over and over again. Get on the foul line. That's what we want to see him more of. Honestly, I like that he tried to do it tonight. You're just playing the, like, you know, the number one defense. And when we talk about this, I mean, we're talking elite, elite. The Celtics are an elite defense. And that's something that's why when we say moral victories. And so Jaren was also, I think, in a good way aggressive tonight. I don't think it was as rewarded. I think the Celtics just get a lot better calls than the Spurs do. But I like the aggression. I think honestly, until Ja gets back, we need that Jaren. We need him every game to really just punish any, you know, bad matchup and just to go hard to the basket, especially in these second quarters. I think it feels like he's doing it better in the second halves. He needs to do it in the second quarter. But yeah. And so that's the big thing for me. I love the response from Jaren after a tough Lakers game, but yeah, I mean, honestly, I think for me, the biggest takeaway is coming out of, we were looking, it's like, okay, we've been playing better with Bismack Biyombo, even with all this, the other crazy injuries, you know, we've kind of been playing a little bit better, and then the Lakers game comes, and I think you feel like, oh, that feels more like the 0-5 team than the 3-2 team. And I think, and so I feel better about looking at the Lakers as the worst 3-point shooting team in the NBA, and them going like 24 for 35, or whatever crazy thing they did. You know, obviously, again, I think people want to take me out when I say shot variance games are tired of it. But I feel like we can look at the past three games of this week and say that we are more the team that beat the Spurs and the team that played with the Celtics. And I think that Lakers game was a little bit of PTSD from last year and just a crazy shot. I mean, just them hitting a bunch of guys hitting shots that don't normally get hit. And honestly, Jaren and Bane both not playing that great. I just think that's a combo. I mean, at LA Lakers, you know, is a bad game. And then also just one other, just empty the notebook. Dan Wojcicki came on a couple local shows here, one of the Lakers beat reporters, and he basically talked about how the Lakers are really taking this in-season tournament seriously. And that AD, funny enough, talks about all the time that he wants this $500,000, that he really wants this prize. And LeBron is hinted at legacy stuff, like he want, like this is would be a thing he would have to say, I won the first in-season tournament. I'm sure Adam Silver is loving that. He really wants LeBron to keep saying that. But all that said is, I mean, as someone who hate watches the Lakers all the time, they're usually the last game on at night when you're going to bed, easy thing to pull up on the iPad or something, that it's just very obvious they took the in-season tournament games way more seriously. And then you combine that with what happened in the playoffs last year. And I just think we kind of ran into a buzzsaw a little bit. And so like I would be, if the last two games have gone differently, I might be coming in here in despair. But I really think the Lakers game now can be a game that obviously keep in the back of our minds if we end up like later on playing playoffs, think about them a matchup. But I think you can throw that game out as not resembling as much the six or seven games that came around it.
And just to come to your defense a little bit about the shot variance, it's easy to really, it's easy to say quickly as an explainer about a game, not because it absolves all of the mistakes that the team might be making. It doesn't necessarily mean that the Grizzlies played amazing.
No. There,
it's no, not all shot variance games are created equal, but what it means really when it comes down to it is that, like, no matter how well you play, if they're shooting, if the other team is shooting that well, you really don't have very much of a chance to win. And that's what the point of the shot variance description of a game be.
Yeah. And I mean, and I still think, I mean, Jaren played bad and Jaren got embarrassed by Anthony right. Davis. I mean, so that still happened. And that is something that we need to keep on the burner as well from that game. But at the end of the day, I just think the worst thing was that game happened. And then we had 3 days of no game. And so it was just 3 days to just stew on a team that most Grizzlies fans hate. And they killed us, and they kind of embarrassed us again after the bad taste in our mouths from last May. And so, you know, I think just all those things combined makes it hard. But I think we, after the last two games, I think that is the moral victory, is that, like, the Lakers game is not as much what we look like as I think these other games around it.
Yeah, and then they come out the next night against the Kings and just get absolutely smoked. So it's just hilarious.
AD had, like, I think 9-7.
Yeah. AD, I will say, for Jaren is not always the most enjoyable player to cheer for because of his seeming inconsistency, especially on the offensive end. Granted, he does so many things we can't see, and it's just unquantifiable, and he is that good. And man, I am so glad I do not have to cheer for Anthony Davis on a night-to-night basis, because it would drive me insane. If you see the potential when he plays like he does against the Grizzlies and has however many blocks and is just like playing like the defensive player of the year, and then the next night can't even get to 10. I'm like, what are we doing here?
And honestly, that was the playoff series too. In the playoff series, he was unbelievable in game one, game three, and game six. And he was just unbelievable in those three games, and he was just very average the other three. You know, unfortunately, we lost one of the three games that he was average on that LeBron layup. But
yeah.
It is maddening because you see how amazing he is.
All right. The need to know for this week. The next game the Grizzlies play is in Houston. First time we're going to be facing Dylan Brooks.
An old friend.
In his arena this time, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Right now, the Rockets are playing really well. They're 15th on offense, 3rd in defense. And there's been a lot of really funny Dylan Brooks content out there if you want to go find it. Has he had some signature offensive games? Yes. Is that the norm for Dylan Brooks? No. Do I believe that that will regress to the mean? Yes. I do, though, think that a reorientation of environment for Dylan was probably the best thing that could have happened to him, combined with the fact that he did get paid, so he doesn't have this, like, edge of being underpaid. Instead, I feel like he's more confident because of what he got in terms of a contract. And then you combine that with Ime Udoka, the coach, and bringing in also some more reliable point guard play in Fred VanVleet. Meanwhile, my second favorite player in the world, Alperen Şengün, is truly playing well. I can acknowledge it.
He did grow a couple inches over the summer. That's helped him.
For sure. He still flops just terribly, and I can't believe I'll have to look up to see if he's gotten any flop technicals thus far this season. All that to say, we're catching Houston at a hot streak for them, and it's going to be a tough game. There's more to it than just the two teams on the floor with the whole Dylan element. But what do you think about this Rockets game coming up?
They've been good. I think it's funny because everybody made fun of them in bringing in their free agents, but it's once again shown. You make a couple good free agent, veteran picks, kind of give a professionalism to a young team, and they can really get some, get a boost from that. I mean, I actually did pick them to be 10th in the West. So there's a part of me that is enjoying the good start as someone who picked them to make the play-in. But I still definitely think that they're going to come down to earth a little bit. Their net rating shows that they are winning more games than expected. As much as I say we're winning less than expected, they're the opposite of us. So it's kind of like they've been getting all the breaks compared to us. I will say we're catching them. So the Dylan thing's probably going to just make everything different. But you know, as much as like the Celtics game tonight was a schedule loss in our minds because it was back to back. So this will be the third game in four nights for the Rockets, that they're playing tonight against the Lakers. They're playing tomorrow against the Warriors. And then they're playing us on Wednesday, where we have Monday and Tuesday off. So in that sense, you know, as far as the regular season, we do have that edge and that we will be more rested. They will be probably riding on fumes. Dylan will be like going crazy, but I can guarantee you that the rest of his Houston team cares more about the Lakers game tonight and the Warriors game tomorrow than they will the Grizzlies game on Wednesday. And so I think in those senses, I think if we play the way we've played in the last six quarters, we should beat the Rockets Wednesday. But we got to, you know, but honestly, we have to keep bringing. I mean, we have to almost play high level intensity defense, I think, on a night to night basis since Ja gets back. And so if we bring the same mentality we brought tonight, I think we'll beat the Houston. I think we will.
It's going to be a great game, and I'm excited for it. Suns, we play on Friday, 4 p.m. So this is a fun kind of the day after Thanksgiving. Most people are off work. It's the final in-season tournament game. Last chance to see that beautiful, beautiful gray court. The Suns right now are 8th in offense, 18th in defense. That's, you know, less than I thought they would be on offense thus far. Granted, their big three have it. I think only played maybe one or two games altogether. Yeah. It's a little bit better than I thought they would be on defense, frankly. That's
far. Well, and I mean, honestly, if you've seen they've had a very favorable schedule on it. I mean, again, I'm going to probably be the guy who I hated on the Suns, so I'm going to be negative, but they have had, I think, like I expect that I'll be shocked if they stay 18th, honestly, you know, when we look in 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. Kevin Durant, I will say he's been playing unbelievable basketball. It's still early in the season. He tends to have some games that he'll sit out over the course of the season. But if he's healthy, he's a must-see in person. Just the shot-making is unbelievable. I think that this team, I'm so down on them as well overall. I think it's definitely a winnable game. And the in-season tournament element of it all, though, is what gives me a little bit of pause here, because I don't know how seriously they're going to be taking it, because they're in a position right now to potentially qualify. And so if they want to play hard and come out and try and run us off the floor, like, I think they could do it. It's a weird start time, day after Thanksgiving. It's not as if they're on a back-to-back or anything like that. So anyway, all that to say, the Suns game is going to be really fun, I think, from a spectator standpoint, because you get to see one of the best players, best scorers of all time, definitely. Yeah. And also, you have that in-season tournament element as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll be missing it because I'll be visiting some family for Thanksgiving, but I'll definitely be watching it. And yeah, I think, you know, it is, the in-season tournament's made it a little different. I still, you know, I guess honestly, they're another opponent similar to the Rockets. I think they're around there too. I mean, I've always thought they're around a play-in team, and a lot of that is because I do think that Durant, with what he's having to do right now, he will have to take some time off, or he will get injured. Knicks at least, but he's healthy right now. It looks like Booker's healthy, and if the two of them play, they're going to be a tough team. Part of me actually might want Beal to play because he's so bad defensively. It's almost kind of like Klay Thompson the same way. Like you know, they're offensively, you know, going to hit shots, but they don't offer much on the defensive end. But again, you know, I think there's another team where we come out, if the crowd's like it was tonight, and people get excited and people are ready, I think it's a very beatable Suns team. They are not good defensively. And I think we've shown that we defend jump shooting teams very well, especially mid-range jump shooting teams. That seems to be something we do very well. And so in that sense, I'm hoping, I would hope for a win. And hopefully on Friday, we have a couple more, you know, we have a Luke Kennard and a Tillman and some other, you know, guys back. Because I think Luke would have a good game because they don't guard very well. Luke would get a lot of good wide open threes and transition and things. So I think these are two very potential wins. I know we're about to get the Sunday game. I might not say that as much. But those two games, I think, are both potential wins. But again, with this team, there is no give me wins. But I think both of them are definitely games we could win.
Yeah, no doubt. Timberwolves, Sunday, 5 p.m., 13th in offense, 2nd in defense. This team is playing amazing right now. They really are. They're playing like one of the best teams in the league. And the only thing I'd say is maybe in our favor is that they're playing the Sixers, then the Kings in the two games before, and then they play the Thunder right after in the Kings and Thunder games. So that, you know, we're the middle of the sandwich there are both in-season tournament games for them. And so is it a situation where, and they're, by the way, those are both at home as well. So they're taking a one game trip and playing a little bit earlier of a game on a Sunday than usual. And so can you catch them in just one of those moments where they're in the midst of travel and aren't thinking about the Grizzlies as a super serious opponent? You also, you do have the playoff baggage along with that. And I think that that just provides a little extra motivation for guys, but at the same time, you don't, you're not playing a team with Ja, you're not playing a team with the best player. And so, but this team is playing really, really well. I definitely feel the least confident of the, of these three games, in this Timberwolves game. So like, if you're going to make me choose, like you're saying, if we're going to have one that we are going to say is the most likely loss, I would definitely say this Minnesota game, just based on how they're playing, and they're a bad matchup. It's similar to the Anthony Davis thing. Like Rudy Gobert, for all that I like to particularly make fun of him for his contract and the trade that they made for him, he's still a pretty good player and can do the things that bother teams that tend to try and score in the paint and aren't particularly great at shooting from three. They just have that good formula, and then you combine that with Anthony Edwards, who's truly playing at an all-star level right now. The Timberwolves are a tough out right now.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, I really fully healthy, I think I would really like our matchup with this team, but with, you know, without, you know, a lot of our team, but especially without Ja, I think this is a tough matchup for us, a tough team for us. But we'll see, you know, and who knows what their injury situation, again, this is another situation where like tonight we played the Celtics. They have an unbelievable top 7-8, similar with the T-Wolves. They have an unbelievable top 7-8, and just have, you know, have had no injuries so far. So we'll see, where they are in a week and who they're playing. Because like you said, around them is some games that probably matter more to them, but I don't know. At the same time, I think they really enjoy beating us. And I think, you know, we'll get probably Kyle going 3-for-3 from three and some other things. So, you know, that's the game I'm going to next. So I keep choosing all these teams where it's the harder wins, but hopefully, you know, hopefully we're coming off a 2-game winning streak and we have a little bit of confidence, maybe a little bit more swagger to us getting healthier. But I think that'll be a tough game. But, you know, the hope would be for sure. It's similar last week. We need to go 1-2. We'd love to go 2-1. That's kind of the way I look at it.
Yep. All right. Lastly, let's wrap up with MVP of the week. I'm going with Santi Aldama. He came off the bench in two games and started one, yet averaged 23 points across these three games in the past week, and he did so much more than that, but I think that alone shows you just the rate at which he's hitting shots, the confidence at which he's playing, and he was the key. I think, I mean, you at this point we're pricing in Desmond Bane scoring between 25 and 30, which is just unbelievable. Like I'm pretty sure he's either 11th or 12th right now in scoring overall in the league. And it's just, I mean, what he's doing is unbelievable. It's similar to last season when we were saying, you know, you could give it to Ja every week if you wanted to in terms of the MVP, but who are the guys that really stood out in particular over the course of a week? And this time it's Santi, and you, I want to remember this stretch of the season. And so want to give him this, this high honor of the week 10 MVP of the week.
So, I mean, I'm right there with you. I think the behind the back pass and the missed three at the end are like sitting there with me in the sense that that he would have been an easy MVP for me if that. So I'll just for the sake, I'll counter. I think I'm glad that you're noting it, but I'm going to go ahead and give it to Bane. I still think Bane overall, especially when you throw in defense too, has been a bigger deal for us. And tonight, but I don't know. I mean, but I'm back and forth on that. I was thinking about that too. But since you named Santi, I'll go ahead and do the prerequisite Bane MVP vote as well. I'm hoping I want to get Jaren in there soon. So I'm hoping Jaren can have a good week. This would be a great week for him to be awesome with some interesting, you know, big guy matchups. But that's what I would say. So
yep. I'll go with Dame. I've been trying to get Jaren as much as possible, but he's finished second a few times. I'll say that. Yeah. On the ballot.
And so. I mean, I think you're right about Jaren. I mean, he does so much defensively that we don't know. And honestly, you know, looking at part of our issue, even with defense, is just teams just don't go to the rim much against us anymore. I mean, you could see with the Celtics is like whenever Jaren went out of the game, they immediately started attacking the rim, but they didn't even think about it when Jaren was in the game, unless they were able to switch him way off. And so I think we just forget, like he completely changes how teams come at us offensively because of how good defensively he is. But it's just, you know, but he has to do a little bit more. If he'd had a game tonight like he did against the Spurs, I think I would have given him the MVP. But it's hard when you get punked in the first of three games too. So
got a big week coming up. A couple days off. Beat him after this back-to-back. Got a big game coming up on Wednesday against the Rockets, their old friend. Dilly. Tune back in. We're going to continue this the whole season, just no matter what the record is. There's plenty to talk about. So thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for subscribing. Leave a review if you can. Give us those 5 stars. It really does help us. So thanks for joining us. For Kraft, I'm Will. We will talk to you next week then.